The recording has resumed also at 9:12. Dr. Bastillo.
Great. Okay, so I have an informal hearing script that we'll go through through the process here. Okay, this is a reminder to the board that the meeting is being recorded. This is case number 2339, Colleen Petrus. We'll have Ms. Chepius call roll with your name and stated position.
Dr. King, professional member, board chair.
Present.
Dr. Bastillo, professional member, board vice chair.
Present.
Mr. Leone, professional member, board secretary.
Present.
Mr. Greer, public member.
Present.
Mr. Barton, public member.
Present.
And now staff, Ms. Richardson, investigator.
Present.
Ms. Sinish, investigator.
Present.
Ms. Crowley, administrative services officer.
Sorry, I was muted. Present.
And my name is Judy Chappies, executive director. Dr. Bastillo.
And Ms. Petrus, are you here by yourself or do you have an attorney present?
I'm by myself.
And just briefly introduce yourself.
I'm a physical therapist.
Okay. And do we have the complainant on the call?
Yes, I am here.
And
yes,
great. May we have your okay? Great. Okay, this interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. So I'd like to have Ms. Chepius swear in the witnesses, please.
Ms. Richardson, Ms. Petrus, Mr. S.S., please raise your right hand. Do you agree to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Ms. Richardson?
I do.
Ms. Petrus?
I do.
Mr. S.S.?
I do.
Thank you.
All right, and then Mindy, can you give us an overview of the complaint, please?
Yes. Board opened case 2339 after a preliminary review of the complaint at your board meeting last May. SSPTA filed a complaint alleging that Ms. Petrus had failed to respond to him on a text on April 14th of 23 for more than three and a half hours. He stated that Ms. Petrus was his supervising PT on that date. Ms. Petrus received a draft copy investigative report and provided a supplemental written response, which was included as Exhibit 4. You also, as background, you had this as an initial review in October of 23. The complainant, SS, stated in a subsequent email after that meeting that Ms. Petrus had also failed to respond to him as a supervising PT 2 days prior to 4-14, so 4-12 and 4-13. Ms. Petrus denies that she was informed that she was SS's supervising PT for those 2 dates. She did confirm that she was aware of her role as a supervising PT for him on Friday 4-14 and failed to respond within 15 minutes of this communication. The board staff identified, or the board confirmed, the following allegations in the investigative report, ARS 322046, failing to supervise assistant personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules adopted pursuant to this chapter, and as it relates to R424303 patient care management, F.2, responded communication from a physical therapist within 15 minutes. This case is for your review.
Great. Ms. Petras, would you like to make a statement to the board?
No, I'll just answer questions.
Great, thank you. And Mr. SS, is there anything that would be additional that you would like to say to the board?
Not at this time.
Okay, does the board have any questions?
Yeah, I have a question to start off with. So I'll direct this towards Ms. Petras, since she's the PT in the situation. Ms. Petras, how would you have found out that you were the supervising therapist typically when you were still working in that setting?
Oh, okay. So let me clarify. When I took this job, it was not clear to me that I was going to be supervising a PT assistant. I thought I was just coming in and treating patients one day a week. Then later on in my employment, they told me that I would be needing to supervise Scott. And so the next day I went over to see him on my own time. So I was supervising him, and I was aware that week that I was supervising him. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. So does the company that you were working for, they assign that to you for a specific day?
After I started working there, they maybe a week and a half later said, you're going to have to start supervising Scott for your building.
Was that for any day that you were working?
They did not say it.
They didn't specify?
They didn't specify.
Okay. And then Mr. SS, in those same situations, how do you find out who is your supervising therapist? Still there?
Yeah, no. So on when I first started KS with my supervisor, I got up on 14th knowing that I was going to need to work on Saturday, and she always wanted me to give her a heads up so that she can be prepared. So I texted her and let her know that I needed to work on Saturday. She said, well, I'm out of state. Well, you know, thanks for telling me. And then I asked her, well, who's my supervisor? And she texted me and said, well, the PT who's over at Desert Peak is going to be your PT at Emmanuel. Okay, fine. And that's how I was informed.
Okay. So, Ms. Petras, you specified in your statement that the day in question, I believe it was 12/14, that you were working at another location while supervising SS?
Yes. I started working in an orthoclinic office after I started this job, and they knew that I was going to be working 32 hours a week. So yes, I was told to supervise him while doing this other job.
Is that pretty typical of the place you were working for them to have somebody supervising a PTA when they're not even working for them that day?
I don't know. I was new to this, new to skilled nursing facility for many years, new to the company.
Did you agree to supervise them on that day, even though you weren't working for them that day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I will say, if I had known that I was going to have to supervise a PT assistant, I probably would not have accepted the job. I put in my resignation April 17th because I realized I could not adequately supervise Scott and do my other job.
Okay.
So I fired myself. I took this job because I worked at this facility 25 years ago, and it was a way for me to give back. So anyway.
Well, thank you.
I feel badly for Scott, but I was told he was not fired because of me. He was fired because they hired a rehab manager. Anyway.
So, Ms. Petras, just to follow up on those conversations, my understanding is that you, from what you've just told us, is that it was kind of common practice for you to supervise PTs off or PTAs off site. Can you tell me how you would ensure you were providing proper supervision when you were not on the site?
With my phone.
Okay. So you're just communicating with them via phone calls, text messages, both?
Yeah, yes.
Okay.
So in the written response that you gave, it sounded like you had set up a phone call with SS the morning of the 14th that's in question here, and that he didn't answer the phone call.
Correct.
Okay, so you were attempting to establish contact with him for patients that day.
Correct.
Are there any other questions? Would you like to say anything in conclusion, Ms. Petras?
No, I think everything's clear what happened. If you guys have questions.
So the board will move into deliberations at this point. Does anybody have any initial thoughts?
With Kelly, I think after reading all of the investigative information responses and hearing the responses to the questions, it was pretty clear and unfortunate that she was aware she was supervising a PTA and did not follow her rules around being accessible and being responsive to text messages from him regarding patient care. So I think that the complaint is substantiated.
Yeah, I would agree as well. It is substantiated. I would have rather, her tell them, no, I'm not going to supervise that day because I'm not even working for you that day. So that would have probably protected her a little bit better. But the fact that she agreed to supervise, even though she was offsite at a completely different company, it puts the responsibility on her to make sure that she's available.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's some mitigating factors because she clearly, has tried to change pack and is, has put herself in a position now where she's not in a situation where this happened again. And I think that's good. But you know, it does seem like a mistake, but she made a mistake earlier, you know, during this incident.
I guess my
before you make a decision on this, I'm sorry for jumping in. Forgive me. I'm just not good at these places where I know that I can get in there and I can't get in there.
Yeah.
According to my understanding from text messages that I have, that the PT knew well in the past that she was my supervising. She said that she worked days Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that was available to me, and that she wanted to meet me on Friday. This was well in the past. She knew long in the past that she was my supervisor at that facility. And the DOR over at Emmanuel even said that. So, and by the way, you don't have those text messages because I expected that the PT would just admit that. But apparently she's not, and she thinks that she didn't know she was supervising me. But how can she not know that if KS told her she was going to be supervising me? Somebody had to be telling somebody else that they're supervising me instead of letting me work autonomously. So those two PTs, KS and this PT, somebody needs to answer why it wasn't communicated to me that I was being supervised that day, and then why 3.5 hours went by and I didn't hear from this PT. That's kind of how I see it. Of course, you don't have those text messages. I did not send them. I apologize. I didn't think you would need them because, I mean, this is clear to me. 3.5 hours, I didn't hear from anybody. I didn't see patients, and then, you know, happens based on the last time that we met.
Thank you for that. But the board is in deliberation at this point. I guess, as Mr. Barton was saying, there are some mitigating circumstances, and I really feel like she did attempt to contact him and talk to him about the patients before the start of care that day. So I would like that to be taken into consideration.
And I talked to him yesterday, and the day before we communicated. Yes, the day before we also communicated. These were two new jobs. And I was struggling to do both new jobs. I had hoped that I could do a better job supervising, and I failed. But anyway.
Okay. So we need to look at potential findings of fact here.
Dr. Basillo, I don't know if we've made a decision whether this is disciplinary or not. If it's not disciplinary, we don't need to find facts. If it is disciplinary, we do. But
thank you. What are your thoughts on this?
I do think the allegations and reports are substantiated, but I'm not sure this rises to the level of discipline. It seems like this is a mistake, readily acknowledged. There has been, you know, attempts to, you know, there were mitigating circumstances. You know, to me, it doesn't seem disciplinary. But I'd love the views on the professional members to see if I'm just missing something.
And the thought that I have is that if this was a reverse situation, we would likely be coming down pretty hard on the PTA for not reaching out to the PT. So I am thinking disciplinary action regardless of, you know, steps that have been taken and things of that nature. You know, we have an expectation that, you know, for a PTA to treat a patient safely, they have to be able to get in touch with their supervising PT within a specific amount of time, and they need to get a response within that amount of time. I don't think that it would be, I feel like it warrants disciplinary action.
The treatment wasn't performed, correct?
No, it sounds like the treatment wasn't performed that day.
And I think in the reverse situation, Giovanni, what we'd be talking about would be something where the PTA went and did treatment, which is why I think we probably would be coming down a little harder on the PTA for actually performing treatment. Here, the PTA did everything right. I didn't get confirmation from my supervising, so I'm not going to perform any treatment, which I think is a mitigating circumstances. Had the PTA gone forward and saying, I know I don't have confirmation from my supervising PT and I'm going to perform treatment anyway, I think that's the reason we come down harder on the PTA, not because they simply just didn't ask. But that's just my thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I guess I do see where Mr. Leon is coming from a little bit. I mean, I'll tell you, Mr. Greer, I'm inclined to agree with you that I'm leaning towards non-disciplinary, but what Mr. Leone says does give me pause because, you know, at least based on the information we have, the allegation is that this PT, lost his job because of this failure. So there is some consequences.
That's
I'm not 100% sure. I mean, part of me says, you know, even if we assume that is true, you know, that may be a company problem rather than a physical therapist problem. And I don't know to the extent to which we ought to consider that. I'd be interested in hearing the other board's members, but that is something that does concern me, that at least that allegation is here.
Yeah. I feel like this particular PTA has brought several complaints before the board for supervisory problems and being able to get a hold of his supervising PT. And I feel like this is maybe the end of that list for a period of time for him. And while I don't condone the actions of the PT, I really don't feel that this is as disciplinary as maybe Mr. Leone does. I would be inclined to issue an advisory letter regarding the rules and statutes of supervision. I feel like the PT was put in a difficult situation, although she did choose to accept it.
I know we have talked about numerous times non-disciplinary orders for continuing education, and I think we have decided that we can't do that. But I would be
orders for jurisprudence that we can't do.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We can issue non-disciplinary orders for continuing education.
That's right. Okay. That's kind of what I'm wondering is if we do some kind of a continuing education order here. I don't know. But I'd be interested. Go ahead.
Oh, we can require a supervision class. That would fulfill that.
Because I think it does go above an advisory letter. I think, this is a very clear mistake. And I think that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and just, is so that the board, motion? Just so the board knows where I stand on this, my thought on disciplinary action was going to be to have her retake the jurisprudence exam. So that was kind of what my stance was.
You're muted, Josh.
Dr. King, I'd love to get your thoughts if you're in a position to provide them.
I am. I apologize for background noise. I'm a little bit torn on this because of Giovanni's perspective. I think that she did agree to supervise a PTA, what she did or didn't understand what that meant, I think goes to whether or not she's, you know, the professionalism on that piece. I am glad that no treatment happened, although I know there's consequences from that too for someone who's most likely paid for a visit, and patients who were expecting care that day didn't get care because he couldn't reach the supervising PTA. In a timely manner, and I'm glad it wasn't an emergency that he actually needed to reach the PT, and she wasn't available. That being said, I can also completely understand an advisory letter or non-disciplinary with CEUs. I don't know if he's treating right now or she's supervising PTAs or would ever do that again, but I think reviewing supervision rules and regs should be important, I think, no matter whether she is or not. So I'm kind of torn. I'm going to lean toward probably not disciplinary action with CEUs.
I'd like to make a motion. I would move that we issue a non-disciplinary order and require the licensee to perform 12 hours of continuing education in the area of supervision. You're muted, Dr. Bastillo.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I lost connection and just came back. Can you restate?
I made a motion for... We're getting some feedback, Dr. Bastillo. I don't know if that's you.
Is that better?
I make a motion for a non-disciplinary order 12 hours of continuing education in the area of supervision.
Gosh, can you clarify the length of time in which to complete them?
6 months to complete.
Thank you.
I would second that.
Is there any further discussion?
As I said before, I'm torn between the perspectives of Mr. Leone and the other professional members. I agree. I think we would be coming down pretty hard on the PTA, and I think this is a nice compromise between the two. It's a order that shows this is a significant mistake and requires some significant training to address. But also takes into account those mitigating factors.
Anyone else? Okay. I think we're ready for the question, Judy.
In case 2339, Colleen Petras, PT, it has been moved and seconded to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education in the area of supervision for a minimum of 12 hours. The continuing education should be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
So, Ms. Petras, the board will be in touch with you about how to submit your continuing education. Thank you. Okay.
Dr. Bastillo, I just realized or was informed that I actually accidentally double booked myself at 10 o'clock. So I'm going to be unavailable for about probably 45 minutes to an hour from 10 to 11. If there is anything that we have a recusal on that might affect quorum that we can do in the next 10 minutes, that may be helpful. I apologize. It was on my calendar and I just didn't see it.
kind of makes my showing up 7 minutes late, puts it in perspective.
I'm just trying to make you look good, Josh.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Knew I was feeling a little low.
Ms. Richardson, Ms. Sinish, are you aware of any quorum issues moving forward? I am not, as long as we retain Ms. Dr. King.
I wouldn't know. I'm not sure what the board members, you know, if they've looked at the agenda, if they can maybe look at it again before and decide if there's anything that they can't participate in.
Agreed.
I have no concerns of recusing on any cases.
Yeah.
Judy, if by chance we lose quorum in that hour that Josh is unavailable, we can always just, you know, postpone it until he can rejoin the meeting if that's possible.
Okay.
The second Josh.
Yes, Mr. Barton. Thank you.
That's correct.
All right. Sorry about that. I seem to be having some internet issues. So we'll do the best we can here. What have we decided to do?
At this point, Dr. Bastillo, we're not aware of any outstanding quorum issues. The request was made for anybody to look at the agenda and decide if there was anything that they were going to recuse from. I do believe of a known recusal, we've already handled the only case that was addressing. So moving forward, as Mr. Harris indicated, if there is something that comes up and we don't meet quorum, we can just postpone that until Mr. Barton's return, when we can reestablish quorum.
Great. Okay. Perfect. Thank you, everybody. All right. So that looks like we're going to be moving on to our second informal hearing here. Case 2330, Jitin Dungarani.
Dr. Bastillo, in an abundance of caution, I'd like to restart the recording again before the hearing. So the recording will stop at 9:45.